This podcast is brought to you by Knowledge at Wharton.
President Trump has nominated Eugene Scalia, the son of late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, to be the next Secretary of Labor. Scalia would replace Alex Acosta, who resigned over growing criticism of his handling of a 2008 secret plea deal for billionaire financier Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein is under arrest in New York, charged with child sex trafficking. Scalia is a lawyer in Washington, D.C., who works on employment and labor issues, in which he mostly represents corporations. He served as solicitor in the Labor Department during the George W. Bush administration through a recess appointment. Scalia has had a history of fighting regulations on behalf of business and at the expense of employees, and some say that may impact how he leads the agency responsible for the protection of workers. With more on this, we're joined here in studio by Brian Berkey, assistant professor here at the Wharton School in the Department of Legal Studies and Business Ethics. He's also an assistant professor of philosophy here at the University of Pennsylvania. And joining us on the phone, Ivan Barenke, who's an associate professor of management and of business economics and public policy here at the Wharton School. Brian, great to see you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dan.
Ivan, great to have you on the phone.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Brian, give us your sense on the nomination of Scalia. There's a lot being written that this probably should not be the person because of his background in supporting business against individuals.
Yeah. So, I mean, unsurprisingly, the president has nominated somebody with kind of broadly conservative views on these kinds of labor issues. So from the Department of Labor website, here's the kind of description of the mission that the department is supposed to have: to foster, promote, and develop the welfare of the wage earners, job seekers, and retirees of the United States, improve working conditions, advance opportunities for profitable employment, and assure work-related benefits and rights. I think it's fair to say that at least in his legal work, Scalia has not represented the sides in the disputes that he's been involved in that would kind of count as promoting that kind of mission.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, that's a concern that many people have about his nomination. But again, I mean, this is just, I think, what we should expect from a president, you know, from the Republican Party.
Ivan?
Well, yes, I would agree roughly with Brian on what he just described. I mean, to be clear, I think Eugene Scalia is a very competent person. So unlike other nominations of people in the cabinet or in the Senate, where you just wonder what their qualifications are at all, that is not the situation here with Eugene Scalia. He has a very long-standing career in law. He served in four administrations already with William Barr in the past, so he's a greatly accomplished lawyer. But he, of course, took the side of representing companies against regulations. I think his most famous name to claim is the litigating against the so-called Walmart law, where all companies above 10,000 employees would be required to pay in Maryland at least 8% on health care. And he managed to get Walmart and other companies out of that requirement. I think when you think about what the Department of Labor does, the Department of Labor is in charge of enforcing labor regulations. And I think this is most acutely the case to make sure that people actually get paid the wages that they are owed. And in the past, between 2009 and 2016, the department actually helped to recover over $2 billion in unpaid wages. Now, I wonder whether this will be the case here, because when you are in charge of the Department of Labor, it is basically the question of like how energetically and enthusiastically you pursue the implementation of these regulations. And if this is not the case, my prediction is that if you're a woman, and especially if you're a single mother, it will be bad news. Why do I say this? Because over two-thirds of hourly paid people are women, and single mothers are disproportionately represented among people who are paid minimum wage. And if they are working conditions where they might be at risk of not really getting fully paid, and the Department of Labor is not on their side, I think this will really hurt the quality of life of these people.
Yvonne, when you think about the Labor Department and Brian laid out the kind of the mission statement, there is obviously a concern that with his history, with Mr. Scalia's history, that many of the issues that the Labor Department might be tackling would be in jeopardy. And one that stands out right now it surrounds overtime and the qualifications for overtime right now. It is a very important topic being discussed across America at this point.
I think my bigger prediction is that it is not just the case that he might not be pursuing the implementation of these regulations that favor the conditions of workers, but I also worry that the department actually be used as an instrument in the pursuit of, broadly speaking, the fight against illegal immigrants and, there's this kind of dubious agenda that is perhaps more driven by, xenophobia and racism than actual concerns on how to make this better. Because if they are used as a tool for that, they might actually be used to target certain companies and certain regulations to make those jobs even less attractive to, in their mind, dissuade immigrants to come to this country. But when they do that, they, of course, will hurt the working conditions of the legal population as well, and people who actually rely on those jobs, these hourly wages and unskilled jobs. So I worry that really people in the bottom 20% of the income distribution might actually will have a harder time in the next years because they're not being protected for various reasons.
Brian?
Yeah, I think that's an important concern. I mean, there are a range of things that the Department of Labor is, at least kind of supposed to do given its kind of mission and mandate and so on that, there are concerns that they may not actually kind of pursue vigorously. But, I mean, this is kind of a strategy that the Republican Party in particular has kind of had to deal with agencies that in some sense have kind of missions that cut against their kind of policy preferences. So, what they've realized is that they don't actually need to change the policies in order to kind of affect outcomes in ways that they seem to care about, right? So it's by staffing these agencies with people who are not going to kind of pursue enforcement of things like, making sure people get paid the wages that they're owed and, that overtime policies are followed and so on, in effect, companies are going to know that, it's much less likely than it may have been in the past that they'll be targeted for enforcement if they, kind of violate the letter of the law, right? And this doesn't require actually changing the law. It just requires filling the agencies, in particular at the highest levels, with people who are going to make decisions about kind of resource allocation in terms of kind of enforcement mechanisms and so on in ways that will favor their own priorities.
And as Yvonne mentioned, and you just alluded to, it's the enforcement piece of this that may be as important as anything, because the Labor Department, as you laid out with the kind of its role, is supposed to be there to be able to protect or to be able to correct mistakes when companies make them. And if you don't have that element coming from the Labor Department, then companies have the ability to basically, have open season in many cases.
Right. So when you have people who, say, aren't being paid the wages that they're owed, companies that are, not issuing final paychecks and things like this that come up, and, some employees or lawyers representing them or something attempt to kind of go to the Department of Labor and say, we need these policies enforced.
Yeah.
And the department, comes back with, give them the runaround, or there aren't the resources available, there aren't the personnel available to kind of pursue the relevant enforcement mechanisms in a timely fashion and so on. All of these things kind of have an effect on how companies kind of perceive, the relevant kind of environment and kind of make decisions about what they're going to do and what they're going to not do for their employees, given the kind of risks of enforcement or lack thereof.
So, Yvonne, looking at the Labor Department in general, take us through the importance that the Labor Department in your mind has on so many of these issues. And I guess a little bit from a historical perspective of how the Labor Department has played this role over the course of time here in the United States.
Well, the Department of Labor was not created by our founding fathers.
Yeah.
It was actually started, I think, in 1912. You know, when you look at the order of succession, you know, in case the president or the vice president can't make it anymore, I think they're down in ranked number 12, 10 or 12. But the Department of Labor is really big. You know, it has a budget of over $12 billion. And I think building on what Brian just said, where they just perhaps might not be pursuing things, or they might say, oh, we don't have the staff, I think my prediction will be that for the next year, the first thing that he will do is to ask for a big budget cut. I'm not sure whether he will go as extreme as it was the case with the Environment Protection Agency, because when there the new one was nominated, he requested a budget of $0.
So, right.
But he will, I think the first thing he will do that instead of renewing the budget of $12 billion, he might only be asking for $8 billion, and that will create a situation where they can't pursue those laws. And the laws that, or regulations that they're pursuing, I mean, I can't really describe them in details because they're in charge of around 2,000 pieces of legislation that they have to enforce with tens of thousands of regulations around them. But essentially their job is, as I said, is to make sure that companies follow regulations, and big companies have to follow regulations about working conditions and you know, making sure that people are actually get paid in the way that they are supposed to because of the contracts, or that they are offered the contracts that they are supposed to have given the employment circumstances that they have. And you know, and this is an interesting time. I mean, if I now can talk to more as a labor economist here, this is an interesting time for the U.S. in general, because we see a lot of new fluid working conditions where people are not necessarily employees, but are working as freelancers or like as independent agents. And what many companies now try to do is try to get away with actually not hiring people as employees, even though essentially people have no independence about when to work and have to be available to work for this company. So essentially they work as employees, but because companies just say, oh, you're just a freelancer, they get right out of having to pay them any kind of health care or social security. But de facto they are working as employees. And again, the Department of Labor is in charge to make sure that the companies actually fulfill this test, whether people are actually employees or not. So this is not just the job of the IRS, where companies might try to get away with this, but employees can say, hey, not employees, but independent agents can say, no, you treat me as an employee and pay my healthcare too. And if they are not, if they say, oh yeah, we will do this, but there's a backlog of 12 months, they create a de facto circumstance where companies get out of it. And now, to be clear, you know, companies can't get away, so to speak, with committing murder, you know, because there is Brian can explain this perhaps better. There's a statute of limitations. So even if you do something now and there will be a new president in next year or even in 4 years, they might still be liable. So it will not be a drastic change. It will be more like a tectonic change. But the direction of the change is difficult for low-skilled people and people on hourly wages.
Brian?
Yeah, so it's certainly true that if, say, a Democrat wins the 2020 election and nominates a replacement Secretary of Labor, that might kind of change the way that the department operates in a significant way, likely would. And in principle, they could go back and kind of address issues that occurred in kind of the period of the Trump administration. But again, I mean, even if the Democrats are able to, increase the budget of the department, again, after what I would imagine would be a likely decrease, as Yvonne described a bit ago, they're still going to be dealing with limited resources. There's only going to be so much that can be done. If there's a big backlog of cases that they want to address, it's still going to take a significant amount of time to do, and that will affect the lives of workers across the country in at least for that kind of intervening period. It's not as though they'll be able to just kind of, you know, on day one, kind of, you know, deal with all of these cases and reverse all of the effects.
And I think one of the other topics that we've talked about on this show and comes up quite a bit is the $15 an hour minimum wage issue. And obviously that's working its way around Capitol Hill right now, but we've seen it more push forward at the city and at the state level than we have at the federal level. But there is that possibility if by some chance we saw a $15 an hour minimum wage, the Labor Department would be involved in the implementation of that and making sure that all of those workers were receiving the correct pay.
Right. Yeah. One of the things that kind of it's expected that that Scalia will do as Labor Secretary is, you know, in some sense, kind of fight against the effort to kind of increase the minimum wage. I mean, you know, the various arguments that can be made that, you know, people on his side of the political spectrum like to make. And, you know, as Secretary of Labor, he'd be kind of influential in kind of pushing these arguments, arguing that, you know, it's not workable or whatever it might be. I mean, this is one of the things that that the outgoing secretary has pursued also. So that's just expected to continue.
Yvonne?
Yeah, you know, if I just we started talking about elections, you can't avoid talking about the elections. And, you know, of course, a core issue in terms of who will win the next election is, you know, who will like a candidate. And in one way where I'm not actually a little bit limited in my skepticism or my pessimism about what's going to happen, and I say I'm particularly worried about women and single mothers because they're most affected by these regulations or the enforcement of these regulations, is that you know, Trump was disproportionately elected by low-skilled white people, and if they now work in a company and the company now starts to curtail proper payment, that, and then they ask them why do they get to do that, you know, then they say, well, you know, nobody's going to enforce it, and then they will immediately feel the impact of changes in regulations, the changes or the implications of this government for their lives. And
Right. And
if you are, I mean, remember, you know, if you are, if, as many of the listeners will know, if you are poor or if you are really dependent on getting paid correctly, this immediately means that you can't make ends meet. You know, that you can't actually pay for supplies for your children, can't pay for medication. So they will instantaneously see this. So I think they will actually be probably paying attention to pushing this and say, oh, these regulations are terrible for companies. And perhaps they are, I don't know, but they are doing it with a broad stroke approach, which will be not very sophisticated. But I think it might really backfire if they really let go of all the minimum wage enforcement, because that will really hurt their base.
What about something like workplace harassment, Yvonne? Because if you go back in the history of Mr. Scalia as a litigator, he once represented HSBC in a sexual harassment case for the employer, not the employees. And while the EEOC handles workplace sexual harassment, there's, I guess, a linkage with federal contractors and the Labor Department on some of these issues as well. And I guess there could be some concern in that area as well.
Well, you know, it is a case-by-case situation. So if you have there are two situations. One, if you have been a victim directly, you know, you can sue the company, and that is basically, you know, you can sue the company directly. So it's not necessarily an issue of regulation. If, however, it is you're discussing the situation that a company creates a hostile work environment, this is more the problem, you know, where you just feel uncomfortable and you don't feel like, you know, you can progress to your full ability, and that you might actually leave or go to a different company and basically forgo career opportunities. This is the situation that the Department of Labor might actually be coming into play again. And yeah, I mean, it is already quite a difficult situation for most employees to actually make progress there. I think this is the circumstance where, again, it might be worrying. But again, you know, I think they have to be careful, because it might really blow up in their faces. You know, if they're if they're actually protecting a branch or certain companies where blatant violation has been happening, you know, that that has not gone well for the previous Secretary of Department of Labor, where, yeah. who was actually who left because he has been helping to bring about a very favorable plea deal for Epstein. So yeah, so they again, this is where my pessimism is perhaps constrained, that you know they can't push the envelope too much here because it might hurt their base.
Brian,
yeah. So I mean, I think there's an extent to which that's right. Given the voter base of President Trump and the people that he'll be targeting in his reelection bid, there are going to be limits on kind of how much they can do to you know, negatively affect the lives of kind of low skilled white workers, since that is a big part of the president's base. It's not clear how closely people pay attention to, you know, what exactly the Department of Labor is doing and kind of how this relates to the administration's priorities with respect to their working conditions and wages.
I'd say in many cases they don't really pay attention to it.
Right. So, yeah. You know, I mean, I think it is true that if they see, oh, you know, all of a sudden they're not getting paid what they thought they were, you know, supposed to get paid, that might lead them to kind of think about, you know, well, what might be the cause of this? I don't know how much of an effect this can have. And, you know, there are sort of complicated issues about kind of, you know, assessing the prospects for reelection. But there, I'm not convinced that what exactly the Department of Labor does in the next year or so is going to have that much of an effect on the political winds.
But it may also, what it may do, it, for those companies that think along this line and think about workplace issues and understand how important they are, this may want to embolden more companies to even go farther to protect their employees, to make sure that some of these workplace issues do not happen, because again, if if the politics don't work out, you know you have to do it instead of the government doing it for you.
Oh, I see. So the thought is that companies might be incentivized to
do
actually
it themselves.
Kind of take up the kind of concern for you know, workplace conditions,
some
wages,
will,
and
some
so
won't.
On.
Yeah.
So to the extent that some companies see the current political situation as an opportunity to, you know, do things like reduce wages and workplace safety and so on. Other companies might see this as a way of kind of distinguishing themselves as kind of, you know, particularly good places to work to try to attract employees. So I think that's right.
For more insight from Knowledge at Wharton, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.